Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. If you'd like to find more sessions, interviews, and story podcasts, visit our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. This podcast features a program session from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference.
I'm going to go ahead and get started, just so you know that you're in the right place. We're here today to talk about OpenCast Matterhorn. I am Mara Hancock. I'm the Director for Educational Technologies at the University of California, Berkeley, and have been sort of the lead PI on the OpenCast project since the early days. We also have with us Chris Brooks from the University of Saskatchewan, and Bruce Santors from University of Nebraska, and they are both core project members. We're going to divide this up, focusing first. I'm going to talk a little bit about project drivers and some of the challenges and opportunities that we've seen with this project. Then Chris is going to take over and talk about our 1.0 product and hopefully do a live demo. And then Bruce is going to talk a little bit from his perspective as both a participant in the project and why University of Nebraska decided to join up and how they're approaching their adoption. And then we'll, of course, look at some of the next steps for the community and hopefully end with about 5 or 10 minutes for questions and answers. So, yes, it's about OpenCast Matterhorn. So what is this thing that we're talking about? This is what we consider an easy-to-install open-source podcast and rich media capture processing and delivery system. I think one of the critical elements here is that we're building it using a services architecture, so flexibility is key for us, that we have a relatively low barrier to entry, so having a low-cost reference implementation, and also looking at it from an open-source perspective, that we have a very open licensing scheme so that we can build a good ecosystem around the work that we're doing that isn't just about higher ed, but it's also about the business opportunities around this domain. And it is a very dynamic area, so that's an important place for us to be in this open environment. So the four key areas that OpenCast Matterhorn addresses is capture and ingest and administration, processing and media analysis and encoding, distribution and engagement. And Chris is going to talk about those in more detail. But those four quadrants are very important. That was the way we focused the project and divided up a lot of the work that we did. So the first question that I think we all have to answer, especially when we're talking to our faculty at home and our administrators at home, is why should we even be investing this money, our staff resources or our hard cash, which is actually very difficult to come by these days. And I think one of the key issues here is that web video really has become a core part of the way in which we as a culture consume information, as well as it's a core part of the way in which we create and share information. It's a way that we really communicate opinions. We express feelings and experiences. And I think a great example of this was in our last presidential election, where web video came forth as a real motivating factor, a way that individuals could come forward and speak their opinions and share it. It became very viral. Some great videos were coming out of households, and some of the best speaking points were coming out of households. So it was a way of democratizing that information as well. So when we look at this in terms of higher ed, it really is a critical contribution that we pay to our students from a learning perspective, but also toward the global dissemination of knowledge. So bringing it a little closer to home, why do we do this for the individuals that we support and work with every day and for the core mission of the university? For learners, what they often say to us is, This is my opportunity. I can actually go in and see, how is this professor teaching? Is this a professor who I can learn from? How do they communicate? When their courses are captured, they use it for exam review. If they have learning disabilities, they say, well, I can revisit this over and over. I can put down my pencil and actually listen during the course of a lecture. And if English isn't my first language, I can slow it down. I can replay it and revisit it. And some folks say, well, my professor speaks so slowly that I speed it up. I can go back and find those salient points. And if I can't understand the way that one professor explained it, I can go and listen to another professor explained it. And maybe that professor is at MIT and not at Berkeley. But those are the things that this kind of technology and infrastructure affords us. For teachers, at Berkeley we have very large enrollment courses. And we've had faculty say to us, it's only fair that we provide this to our students, that we complement the rest of our course materials in this way, that it allows us to see our students because they're not so busy with their, you know, note-taking during the course of the lecture. I can see their faces. I can see when they understand. I can use this technology to reach them where they are in a format that they're comfortable with. It gives the students time to reflect so they ask better questions when they come back to class. And, in fact, it can help me improve my teaching because I can watch myself and I can watch others. So it's not just for the teachers and learners. It's also, I think, important for institutions. For many of us, especially public institutions, it's really vital to our core mission around outreach and dissemination of knowledge and giving back to the community. It provides visibility for us as institutions. It allows us to highlight and showcase our faculty and our learning environment. And if you live in California, instructional continuity is awfully important, and it helps us get up off the ground more quickly. I think the other thing that's really important here is that we're really looking at a new paradigm in terms of teaching. We know Lecture 1.0, we've been there for centuries, where a professor stands in front, delivers lectures, very little back and forth. And we all know that we're really aiming, striving to support an area that provides much more interaction. So, you know, in the first days and early days of lecture capture, we kind of were allowed to move from a Lecture 1.0, where it's just there in this space, to moving to sort of what we consider a 1.5 world, where it actually allows us to deliver it more on demand, to be able to repeat and view it. And that's where we're living now. But with OpenCast Matterhorn, what we want to be doing is thinking toward the future and how do we position ourselves toward the future. So we've been spending a lot of time building a platform that we hope, while it addresses the 1.5 needs, will also enable us as a learning community to develop toward the Lecture 2.0, where we're actually able to engage our students around the content. And as our friend from MIT, Vijay Kumar, says, content is king, but context rules. So how can we begin to bring this media actually into the context of the rest of our learning experiences and learning activities in a way that is very rich? That's rich. So it's not just about consuming the media. It's actually about creating it and sharing it and making it meaningful to you as a learner. And providing context as a teacher. So, heading toward 2.0, 3.0, the new world. As we began to look at as a community, what were some of the challenges that we're facing? One is that the technology is changing very rapidly. Very difficult to get. Where do we put our investment? And the investment actually seemed to be quite high. So in the commercial landscape, what we were seeing was that there were some very, fairly mature, robust solutions, but they were fairly inflexible in that we couldn't see into the code, we couldn't build our own integrations, and quite costly. You have to go through that door and then wait for them to develop the upgrades. In the higher ed landscape, we had people doing some really innovative work that was incredibly flexible, often tied very closely to their own workflow and their own operations at their campus. So it was quite costly for them to manage and maintain that locally. as well as quite costly for any one of us to come in and share and take that code. We also saw that in this, where we were facing these kinds of barriers, that often these systems have very limited enterprise integration. So we were unable to leverage some of those core services that we all have, maybe for our learning management systems. And so we had an opportunity to rethink this and think about it from a bigger way. So in terms of the opportunities, I think that really what we saw as we came together in the OpenCast community, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that community in a moment, is that we had an opportunity to provide reasonable choice. So it wasn't just simply your choice of a vendor product or your choice of an open source product, but it's a choice down at a much more micro level, which is why we built this out in a services model, so that you could actually maintain your investment where you needed to. So if I've already invested in hardware in my classrooms, I don't necessarily have to go and reinvest when I decide to go another direction with my technology. So, you know, we think it's a healthy environment, yes, to have an open source option at the table, but also an open source option that is flexible. The other area is accessibility. You know, every learner has a right to be able to learn regardless of their disabilities. And rich media creates a very complex world for us to do that in. And what we were finding is we were often doing that after the fact, and it was very costly for us to do that, and didn't provide equal access. So we wanted to build something that had accessibility built in right from the beginning. So it's not just about accessible players, but also about building in the ability to caption and provide some of that deeper content and expose that. And then, of course, in terms of all of the associated benefits, the curb cut effect that comes with that, like a deeper ability to discover the content down inside of the media. And ultimately, that we could be driven by the core needs of the academy and that we could continue to innovate as appropriate based on the pedagogical needs and reinvest in ourselves, not in a way that we were investing before on our local campuses, but invest in a smart and scalable way where we could prioritize lowering the cost, prioritize the ability to scale in a diverse environment, and also increase the educational impact. So in 2007, we formed the OpenCast community. It started as a community of practice, and then we moved toward building a managed product around the idea of building this easy-to-install open-source platform. 12 institutions came to the table. I think it's important to say here that 5 of these institutions had their own homegrown systems that really met a lot of their needs from soup to nuts. But there were many of them were also looking at how can we now move on to the next generation? How can we extend this? And in talking with one another, they realized the first plan of attack was, well, how can I borrow from you and make it work with my system? And that really wasn't going to happen. So those institutions really decided that when they joined up to do this, they were willing to walk away from their code. So this really is built from the bottom up. We brought all of our vast experience to the table to do it, but we didn't reuse much code there. The other thing to note is that it really is an international collaboration. About half of the institutions are in Europe and half are in North America. I realize that we're missing some other important parts of the world there, but it has been a very important part of, I think, the product development because we're looking at various pedagogical paradigms. As you know, in Europe, the teaching is a little bit different, and when you get to the UK, it's very different. So the concept of the importance of a lecture comes up. This was to get Matterhorn out of the door. For the first 2 years, we have funding from the Mellon Foundation and the Hewlett Foundation, and a considerable contribution from these institutions, quite a considerable. And that's, I think, going to be key for us in terms of sustaining it into the future as well as building out our community. So to hit on those 3 points I talked about, I think this issue of lowering costs is very important for us. So really the vision here is we want to allow all institutions – regardless of their size or their profile, liberal arts, R1 University, to be able to enrich and extend their classroom while leveraging existing investments and deploying off-the-shelf technologies where they can. So we don't reinvent the wheel where we don't have to. The ability to scale up, this is key. The issue of flexibility is key. I think the other thing here is recognizing that this is not a platform that sits to the side of the enterprise. It is actually a core part of the enterprise. And that we have the ability to look at it not just from deep enterprise integration, but also to very distinct pedagogical use cases. And that really is, I think, from my perspective, the biggest promise in terms of what we're trying to do. And that leads us to this increased educational impact. Seeing that the learner is actually a co-creator in this content, that in fact learning is a conscious endeavor, and we can create tools and scaffolding around this media from a learning perspective, and that really our end goal of creating a more seamless user engagement around the rich media is ultimately going to be critically important. And I just want to add to that integration point. So when we talk about integration with a learning management system, the easy thing is simply to embed it and show the content there. But here, what we want to start to see is actually very rich interactions around that content and between people around that content. So I'm now going to introduce Chris and have him take you through the product itself.
Thanks, Mayor. So I'm going to talk at a high level quickly about some of the architectural decisions we made, and then I'm going to go straight into a demo and show you guys the meat. So as Mara indicated, that there's four different kind of themes or components or series of things that we're interested in. The first is in the actual capture itself and how people obtain these lectures. Now, a lot of people are already going into classrooms. They have students in classrooms, or they have professional videographers go in and record them. So we wanted to be able to support these people. And so user-generated content and video that already existed in libraries was very important to us. But beyond that, we also want to capture that lecture that's going on right now. So we wanted to have, it's often called an appliance, a machine of some kind in the classroom that's going to capture the VGA, that might capture an NTSC or a couple of NTSC signals, microphone, and so forth. And finally, we wanted to be able to schedule these all automatically. Now, scheduling is a tough problem. It's been solved many, many times over. We also threw in our two bits on it. But the important thing is that institutions, higher ed institutions, need to be able to tie this to their information systems. And so that's what we built Hooks specifically for. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. So beyond this, we also look at the next step in the phase. And you can think of it like a pipeline or a series of roads. Ingesting and processing. We needed to support features that are needed now and that maybe are missing in a lot of systems, branding, captioning, and so forth. And I think it's great. If you go and look at an iTunes U video right now, some of the great videos that are on there, and think about the amount of work that went into putting those videos, that post-production work, just to add a little intro music, a little outro music, some closed captioning. We wanted our tool to be able to handle that as automatically as possible, and so we built in Hooks for that as well. Beyond the obvious, we wanted to do some interesting research things as well, media analysis, slide OCR. So we wanted to be able to have not only broad searching, search through all the lectures available to you, but also deep searching, search within this lecture to find the particular piece that we're interested in. And there's some ongoing work in that area with camera tracking, speech recognition, and so forth within our group. And finally, flexible workflows. Now, the word workflow is great because it's so broad it could mean absolutely anything. But what we mean by this is that every piece, if you think of the system as a series of components, you at any time can go in and add a component of your own, change some of the components of ours, and change how the services kind of choreograph together. And so the workflow encoding was, this is kind of a personal aside, was very important to us when we went to deploy this system, because we had some legacy systems that we wanted to integrate with. And we were able to code this up quite easily using the workflow engine that was available in Matterhorn. And I'm happy to answer questions later on that process if you want to grab me. Distribution management, a lot of different universities, and Mara talked a little bit from R1 down to the Liberal Arts College, have very different methods by which they want to share these videos. Some are open, some are closed. Some want to put them on YouTube, iTunes U. Some want to put them in Blackboard, Sakai. And some don't have any of these tools and aren't sure where they want to put them. So we provided a number of different options. We integrate nicely with iCal, by the way. We provided a number of different options, and these included integrating into kind of, you know, the main systems that you would expect people to, as well as this local storage and distribution service. And that's basically an all-in-one simple media portal, and I'll put that kind of in air quotes because it raises the ire of most people. But it's just a simple example that you can use to get started. And so the last components are really tools, and that's the part that I really want to show you in the demo. I want to show you the player tools that we did. I want to show you the accessibility tools that we built into it. And some of the features, there's some excellent features in the tool, bookmarking, annotating video. I probably won't get to show them all today, but the player is really kind of a neat thing. But it's important to note that with the way we've built workflows, if you already have your favorite player, if you want to use YouTube's player, if you want to use JW Player, whatever, you can do that. You don't have to take our player. So I'll drop some quick tech buzzwords for those who might be interested in it. It's mostly J2EE with a little bit of Flash on the front end. It works with a variety of databases out of the box, MySQL, Postgres, Oracle. It's mostly based on Linux, but also full macOS support, so you can run every component on macOS as well. And Windows support is coming in our upcoming version. It comes with a default encoder, which we call FFmpeg, but you can replace this with your any encoder you might already use. Again, flexible workflow. Standards-based, we use REST-based APIs throughout all of our components. And this was very important for me because we had to integrate this with our scheduling system, our class management system, and so forth. And so trying to write connecting glue is actually, it seems like sometimes that's more of a problem than writing the solution itself. And all of our APIs are really solid. They've got good documentation, and I'll show you a few of those later. Well-known and well-tested frameworks. We're not using anything too crazy, jQuery, OSGI, et cetera. We handle common data file formats, H.264, MPEG-2, FLV. But, of course, with the encoding engine, which is another open-source project, FFmpeg, it can handle pretty much anything you throw at it, VC1, for instance, or whatever. And data objects common to higher ed software. Again, we're higher ed building this for higher ed. So we know what we need. We know what we've been using. And there were enough of us that even if I didn't think, for instance, Nebraska needed that, they were there and they could tell me that they needed that. And so things like iCalendar support to just fit with R25 or Google Calendar or any of these kind of systems are things that we included. So I'm going to show a live demo here. I'm going to try and show a live demo. Is this our demo, Mark? There we go. Green? Okay, good. You're seeing what I'm seeing. So this is kind of the welcome page. If you just installed the system, this is what you'd get. And first thing that should excite developers is all of our REST docs are right here. And all the information about our REST endpoints are right here. It's very easy that you can go in and you can start exploring the system from day one. And I'll say that you can actually go look at a system similar to this. This is our demo system, but we have a nightly system and we have a QA system as well. So if you're interested in that, I'll give you the URLs. They're public. You can play with them. You can get an idea of what things look at and so forth. First thing I'll show you is a few of the admin tools. So this is a typical dashboarding component. We can see all the different courses there, who maybe presented them. Some of them have failed in their processing, some haven't. We could go into the info to inspect why they failed and see which steps in the workflow they failed. Maybe they're waiting. Another state that's quite common is holding for closed captions. At the top, we can, of course, zip between the different kinds of states just to see, to filter some of the recordings. And in the next version, we actually have a full text filtering as well coming. I'll schedule a recording here. So let's say I want a typical academic workflow. I want a group of recordings. I want to do a class every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or something like this. So we'll just say test. I can enter a whole bunch of metadata, and these fields are all extendable based on some of the universities who might need those. So, for instance, the University of Saskatchewan, where I'm at, we need the title. That's about it. We need to know what series it's in so that we can mark it to which class. But at, for instance, ETH Zurich, they need a lot of metadata because they're integrating it deeper with their library systems and cataloging systems. And so it's nice because it's flexible. You're not locked into whatever we've prescribed as metadata. You can change these on the fly quite easily. We have repeating schedules, so we can say Monday, Wednesday, Friday, starting on the 20th, ending on the 29th at 12, sure. So the agent refers to the box that's in the classroom. So I'm scheduling this, and I'm expecting there to be a box in this classroom. Right from this drop-down, we see that we have two, a demo one that comes out of the box that you can play with, or one we've called here Centrino Opencast. This is actually a box sitting back in Saskatchewan right now. When you choose the machine you want to capture from, you can choose the various different streams that you're interested in capturing from as well. And then here's the all-important workflow. So you can choose what aspects, what workflow operations you want. So for instance, some classes you might want a DVD created at the end as well. So you can choose a workflow that does that. Some classes you might want it pushed to, a remote location. Let's say if you're teaching a cohort that's spread across two universities, so you want it published in a different server, you could do that. And so you could just choose these here. Now, underneath, all of these look like are, and I'll jump into geek speak for a sec, all of these are just an XML file that's declarative and lets you change the workflow operations. So what that should mean to you is that it's friendly and easy to do, and that's a good thing. Like I mentioned, you can decide to upload caption files and say that you want to review the recording before. It's interesting how in this project, how different universities approach this as part of their business workflows. Some are, yes, we review everything, and then we trim things, and then we change the audio, and then we publish it. Some, like ours, are, it just goes up. We call it an authentic experience. whatever happens in the classroom maybe doesn't stay in the classroom, but it's all in that video. We have different distribution channels, of course, as mentioned. 1.1 will have YouTube and iTunes. By default, we have this Matterhorn Media Portal. In Saskatchewan, again, we tied this to our own particular one, and that worked out well. Oh, it doesn't like a duration of 0 minutes. Okay.
On your screen, Chris.
Oh, yeah, I don't know why I'm craning my neck. So I want to show you that we have the exact same thing for other media that you might already have captured. So if you want to upload a recording, let's say you have archives of televised footage, for instance, from distance ed classes that you want to make available to the general public. Maybe classes a couple of years old on horticulture, and you want to make it available so people who are just interested in the subject can come to the university, learn a little bit about it, maybe whet their appetite for it and come in. So we built this whole system to be designed to work with these two kinds of media. And I think that often differentiates us from other systems out there that maybe work with one. You can upload video into it, let's say like YouTube, for instance, but you can't schedule a machine in your classroom to do that. And so I think that that's kind of a nice feature. Okay, and then the last thing I want to show you is the player. So the media portal is really simple. It's just an RSS feed or an Atom feed with a little bit of lipstick on it to make it look a little bit better. Easy to integrate into. We're a Blackboard university in Saskatchewan. So, for instance, easy to integrate into Blackboard. We also use uPortal, easy to integrate into uPortal. So RSS is very nice for this. our player right now, there's a bunch of it is written in Flash while we wait for HTML5 to kind of settle down a little bit. We have an HTML5 working group, and that's one of the nice things about the OpenCast project. There was just somebody who wasn't involved in the Matterhorn core build, who wasn't part of those 12 universities, who's really interested in knowing if we would have HTML5 support, decided to spearhead this group. It's a nice big open community. Now a number of us are involved in it. A number of people who weren't involved in Matterhorn are now involved in it through that project and so forth.
Yeah, please. Great. So,
you get the joy of hearing me talk twice.
Hi, I'm Chris Brooks from the University of Saskatchewan.
I could maybe mute that. So the player is what you would expect from a web player with a few tweaks. First, accessibility is mentioned, high on our concerns, so we have closed captioning that you can turn on. We deliver multiple streams, so students can choose one stream. So if they're smart and they just want to look at me, then they can do that. If they want to look at both streams, they can. If they want to emphasize one or the other, they can do that as well. And they can watch in full screen as well, multiple streams. And that's a really nice feature. And people are used to watching full screen video. And now you have Google TV, Apple TV, all these different embedded devices. People want to watch that cinema experience. And so it's nice that we have that ability to show them and let them choose which streams they want to watch. We have a timeline here, and when you hover over the timeline, you see little thumbnails, and those thumbnails correspond to those down here. And the neatest aspect of this for me is that those are all automatically identified, so that nobody had to go in and say, chapter this, chapter this, chapter this. And it's not naive in the way that it's 0 seconds, 30 seconds, 1 minute, 1 minute 30, or something very predictable. It's based on the content. Now, it's not perfect, so here, for instance, the slide has a little more on that if you just wait a couple of seconds. But it's pretty good, and students overwhelmingly love these. You have the ability to hide segments, to see text on the segment as well. So this is the automatic OCR text. We really use this right now for deep searching. Most learners don't look at this material, but it's definitely something that we could have if we wanted to, or build bigger items in. If you wanted to tie this, for instance, to your DSpace or your DuraSpace repository and start using finding associated content, you could do that there. Last thing I'll just mention here, shortcuts. This is part of our accessibility pledge and accessibility challenge. Everything you can do in the player can be done through shortcuts. And so accessibility was really, from day one, built into it. So, an open system, infinite possibilities. We supply what we call a reference implementation with really nice APIs, a sophisticated workflow engine, and specifications for buying those boxes that'll go in the classroom. And they're very easy to use specifications, and they've been tested in classrooms. From the trenches, I mentioned a couple of these things. Unique topologies at the University of Saskatchewan, we have some room that has dual VGA, and we needed to capture that in our proprietary system that we were trying to use. Couldn't do that, but with Matterhorn, we were able to extend it to do that and contributed that back. And then unique processing instructions that are important for our university, our institution, we can add those. So I'll turn it over here to Bruce to talk a little bit more about his experience and the broader community.
Yeah, as part of, we're at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, we are a base camp, so I'll talk a little bit about that more as we get into this, but we're helping the U.S., so we hope we get to talk to all of you. But maybe not all at once. So these are centers of experience where we're actually engaged in a pilot right now. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about our story. And that's, we're a land-grant university, about mid-size, in the middle of the country. We're pretty middle people. And maybe a lot of people can relate to our experience. We'll see. First of all, I think you need to ask, we had to ask, why open source? What was that about? Because, it's not for everyone, and there's choices involved in all this. And And I appreciate every one of you, you know, me included. We have to look at this stuff, and we have choices, and we have to make decisions in this. And so we came down to, we looked at other products. There's some good stuff out there, you know, and some stuff we liked, and some stuff that's all we could do was like it, because we could never afford it. And so we started viewing, we heard about this open source stuff going on, and we got involved in the conversation. And we're going, wait a minute, you know, like, we, looks like there's some opportunities here for us to invest in this, you know, open source initiative that we could view as an institutional investment, because we would be leveraging our own resources to help us reach some goals that we were trying to achieve. And part of this was, we have a lot of classrooms with a lot of technology in them, and we didn't want to set that aside or have something, you know, aside from that or whatever. We wanted to integrate. We wanted to be able to scale, but we wanted to be able to scale as we could scale, you know. And we didn't want to have the sole driver in scaling to be just money. It's always going to be money, but not just money. And so we also saw this, and this is I put this up there. This is a little in hindsight, because we're having an incredible experience in this collaborative environment. My technical people have, you talk about professional development, they've gained things from this interaction that they would never get otherwise. Because this group of people that we all share a passion, and we all share a desire for this to be successful, plus we have a voice in what's being done and where we're going. So, just a few things to keep in mind when we're looking at this. We cannot project a future based on the way things are right now with any certainty. It's a long way of saying there's risk no matter what choice you make. And, you know, that's okay, because we need to move forward. And I don't care, there's risk in choosing a vendor. And I can cite many examples in my long career here of vendors that no longer exist. And, you know, so it's just a matter of, so what do we want to do here? Well, one of our criteria is we wanted to plan for change, because that's the one given that we have. We know no matter how things are today, things will change. And so we wanted to look at something that was open enough and allowed. It was designed with change in mind. So that allowed us to be able to make choices as we're moving. So this is a moving target. There's no question about it. But now we can make choices, or if we make a choice and go, well, that didn't work, we aren't locked into something, and we can say, let's try something different. Or we get on the list, and we see three other schools that have tried something else, and we go, cool, that's what we want to do. How do we do that? And we get a response that is, you know, pretty good. So this is philosophical, I know, but I just want to throw out there, in all honesty, we're all trying to do this. We're all trying to do our best to make it our institutions be where they need to be. There's no wrong choices. It's all just part of the journey. So I just want you to know, like, don't just make a choice, because you got to do something. I'm telling you. So our sense of benefits for us is, again, easy to add classrooms. We have classrooms we have technology in. We're going to take the easy wins first. Then we're going to add more as we go along, and we're going to go by demand. We have criteria that we can use that allow us to be very flexible in how we deploy. There's about $2,000 per appliance in per classroom. Some classrooms will do with less. Some will probably put a little more in. You know, one of the cool things about this is there's actually a low management overhead for us, because we already have people supporting classrooms. They're supporting that front end of it. We have systems people. They support that. We have applications people. They're working on, you know, the the integration and the project with it. And then, you know, so it's like we're just – this is incremental addition for these folks. So we like, you know, the automated back end. What do I have to say about that? And then, you know, this is designed with the future in mind, and it really is. So the service architecture is a big win for us, and it allows us to be, you know, very flexible and not waiting for that feature to be implemented in quarter three of 2011 or tell us where you want things to go. No, we're actually sitting there going, this is, you know, inputting into the community and seeing things happen. Very, very good. So where are we going? We're currently, we're going to focus. Whoops, I skipped ahead one here. Where is UNL going? We're doing a classroom pilot this fall. We have a classroom fully equipped. We have several faculty in there. We're doing it, and the students are getting the player that you saw, and they're, in fact, after only about 2 weeks of running this pilot, there's another faculty person came to us and said, can you do this? Because my students have seen this, and they're asking for it. And I'm going, sure. We'd love to. And so we're seeing already in just our basic thing of the students asking for it. So then we're going to increase the pilot this spring to scale it out to maybe about 10 classrooms. We also have a couple of little side things. We're putting some systems in a training room, so we're actually going to be recording some live training and making those available to people for you know, for on-demand and as-needed training. We're also working with the athletic department, and that's where you don't have to schedule anything. You can just throw video in there. You can do one-offs. We're working with the athletic department. They have a special class that they're doing. They want it put up once a week, so we can accommodate that. It's really easy for us to be able to accommodate a diverse number of needs, so that's a good thing. We're in going to write I should mention first, while we're doing this, we're also, in conjunction with everybody that's involved in this, writing a production plan. Obviously very important, but we want to do a reasonable, scaled-up implementation of this. So we're working on that. And then we're, of course, staying very actively involved in the Blackboard, the OpenCast community. Part of that is writing Blackboard hooks because we're actually a large Blackboard school. So we're going to put that out to the community saying, this is what we're up to. Let us know if you want to help us, because I think I've heard rumors that Northwestern's already done something. I don't know. But if anybody's there from North, please see me afterwards. But we can collaborate and work together in doing this stuff. And then we are Basecamp. And the Basecamp means that you can contact us. We will talk to you about what we're doing. We will show you. If you want to see under the hood, we'll show you that. If you're implementing and you're having problems, we'll do our best. But there's actually, it's not just us, and it's a whole community of developers and people that are behind this. And I truly am amazed at when a question goes out, how quickly it's answered. So the next steps for OpenCast, which, surprise, surprise, really fits nicely with where we're going, because a large part, we had a voice in the next steps for OpenCast because we're part of the OpenCast community, and things are discussed and things go out, and so we participate in it. So we're certainly focused on adopting and supporting Matterhorn, but one of the beauties of this is the value add of this system, because we're going to be working with and additional projects that will be coming along. And so you can read some of them there. And you guys can talk about this some more if you want, but it's a matter of this is where we're going, this is what we're doing, and we're part of the roadmap, and we're inviting you to be a part as well. So I'll stop right here. and we'll open it up for questions.
Yes. Yeah, so I'll just repeat the question here. I don't know. Is this mic on? Okay, great. So the question was about the appliance. Do we build it ourselves? Can the institution build it yourself, or can you buy it from a vendor? Right now, there isn't a vendor that sells it, and we have complete instructions on how to build it yourself, including links to places that can sell you the components. And I can talk more offline if you're interested in what the appliance looks at. There's part of our community, though, are a number of appliance vendors, groups that sell different appliances, and they're looking to make their appliances compatible with Matterhorn, and I imagine that you'll be seeing announcements about that shortly. But our reference implementation is definitely something you can build yourself.
Sure. I think that's a great prompt. I think one of the areas that Chris talked about was that capture ingest area, and I think it's really important for us to recognize that media comes from multiple places and media takes all sorts of forms. And so even in this first iteration, we're not just about capture. We enable capture in the classrooms, but that we also enable the upload and ingest and processing and delivery of other kinds of media content. So some of the areas that we're interested in exploring, obviously we're working with Indiana University and some other folks who are looking at ways of integrating media and annotation tools around library content. So we're hoping that there may be ways that Matterhorn can play a role in that environment, or we can help provide some tools that would do that, or maybe they can provide some tools that would help us. The other area, you know, in talking with my library, there is the issue of being able to deliver and distribute content that the library may own, but into a controlled environment for fair use. And so using Matterhorn as a distribution tool to do that work. And I would say the third is this whole area of media preservation. And Zurich is working very closely with their libraries there to do that, but it is a real opening in terms of what is the entire life cycle of this media, not just capture, but other content that gets developed. I think that one of the big questions there is also, as we look at these more constructivist kind of environments where we have knowledge that's built up around this media, how do we want to archive and manage that constructed knowledge in a way that maintains its context and maintains the sense and also the richness into the future?
So I got to be honest, I don't know the details of the captioning, but there was a group that specifically worked on this, and they're still involved in the project. The sub-project is called Open Caps, so I'd be happy to give you some contact information.
Yeah.
We'll talk after, and I'll give you some contact.
Yeah. I saw some yeah, back there. Mm-hmm. You.
Yeah, so the question was, again, about closed captioning. Yes, the closed captioning is done out of band right now, and so the file is created manually, either by yourself or by a third-party service. There is a sub-project that's looking at transcription detection through audio. It's a tough problem. Google actually has recently added this to YouTube for a number of educational facilities. I'm not sure if that's broadened yet. But it's a very tough problem because you need that 99.9% guarantee of quality. And right now it's only a 98% quality. So that's a big gap actually when it comes to research. So there is a group that's looking at this. It's ETH Zurich, and they're part of the Matterhorn build. And I think that they're planning to contribute that back as open source. It might be as early as January this year. It's built off of CMU Sphinx.
Can I just add that OpenCaps is a tool that was developed and in sync with the work they were doing, that it was part of the funded project. It was developed out of the ATRC, which was part of the University of Toronto and the Ontario School of Design. And we do have a captioning service that integrates directly with that. So while it's its own module, it doesn't build in the install, it is indeed part of the workflow and can be built in a more tightly integrated way if you want it that way.
We kind of talked about OpenCast and what
Well, I think it depends on what you're trying to do. First of all, you need the resources at home to be kicking the tires and doing all that work. But there's really very low there's very low barriers to being involved. We have a couple of lists, the primary one being the OpenCast Matterhorn list. A lot of discussion goes on there in the open, so joining there. We also, all of our meetings are held in Adobe Connect and are open to anybody to join, and the meeting schedules are posted. So one of the key areas is to think about where, if you want to contribute, where do you want to contribute? And each of those four areas actually has a product owner. And those product owners then manage the resources or coordinate with the resources who are contributing to that area. And then they manage the project across. So we have something that's called the product owners group. And they meet regularly, and people are welcome to attend that. And they coordinate with one another to make sure that we stay in sync and we build against our iterations. We also have a project manager that helps with that coordination. So I think the first thing is, how, you know, what are you looking to gain from Matterhorn? What do you want to contribute? And then we can help plug you in the right places.
So just to follow up on that.
Yeah. So the question was in terms of the overall governance model. So I just referenced these product owners that create this sort of product team and the project manager who coordinates across those. And yes, we do, as a managed project, we have a board, and it consists of membership from all of the contributing schools. But really, we are a board that looks at issues around strategy and communications. And we look to the product owners to build consensus around product direction. And we have an escalation process built in where if the product owners can't agree and the project manager can't coordinate an agreement, that it would come up to the board. But we've never had that happen. They've all been able to work through it. It's a very collegial group. Not that they don't ask each other hard questions. There's been, you know, good debate, but they also are all aiming for some of the same end goals, and so we're able to work through these issues. Okay, so it's time. Thank you very much for coming, and we'll be here for a few minutes, so please come up and talk.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.